also, I am sure, find information on the website there. It's a new website, so we welcome you to check it out. It's really slick. Today is August 1st, 2012. The markets were down just a bit today. The Dow closing at 12,976, the NASDAQ at 2920, and the S&P closed at 1375. I hope that the weather holds out for me this evening because I'm planning on going to an Iron Pigs game a little later. So we should all collectively hope for nice weather for the rest of the night. But not so nice that you don't stay tuned to the show right now. Last week, we discussed jobs, education, and women. We looked at the stats, the balance of education and women and jobs, keeping that balance, how to make it work. Tonight, we are discussing paying for college. Now, this isn't a topic that maybe we would normally talk about on the 1st of August, but I know it's going to be foremost in a lot of people's mind that all of a sudden those tuition bills are going to start coming and you're going to have to start making payments if you haven't already. So I want to talk a little bit about paying for college, and more particularly probably for people who are going to have college costs coming up in subsequent years, even more so. And this would apply even to grandparents who like to help out their children, their grandchildren with those college costs. We want to alert you to some things that you can pay attention to, that it all becomes part of the mix, making it all work together. So we're going to talk about some options, some strategies to implement as we go through the show. We are live, so you can call in with questions. This topic is not my forte, but I will do my best to help people if you call in with questions about this. But you are always welcome to call in with other financially related questions. Andrea will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we could talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And again, you can always ask questions off topic. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So let's get started. Our topic again is paying for college. Now, folks who are used to listening to me, I try to always have a topic, kind of start general, broad, and then we, you know, work in details and kind of get a little bit more complicated as we go in the show. The rundown tonight is we're going to talk a little bit about the cost of college, because sometimes it could be misleading when you hear how much college costs. You may not be getting the full picture. So we're going to talk a little bit about the cost of college and then some strategies to maybe implement now so that you can qualify for financial aid. And what is financial aid? What kinds of aid are available out there? For example, grants, loans, work study. What do those mean? Talk a little bit about completing the FAFSA. That's a show in and all of itself, but we will highlight that a little bit, or at least a way for you to kind of get an idea of what kind of aid would be available. And then some other sources for paying for college, some other clever ideas to think about. And at the end of the show, touch base with 529s. 529s are those college savings accounts that have some tax benefits to them. So we'll talk a little bit about that at the end. I will assume at this point that we don't have 529s, and we're trying to figure out how to pay for college. If you had 529s, you might have some money to pay for them. So we're going to go through those attributes of 529s as well. So let's start with the cost of college. Now, I went on a website, studentaid.ed.gov. There are lots and lots of resources for getting information about financial aid, education, colleges, lots and lots of information out there. You just have to be very careful where you're getting it. We don't want you paying for that information if there's so much information that is available from the government free of charge. So we want to caution you on which websites you're going to. But this is a studentaid.ed.gov finaid.ed.gov. There's another website, finaid.org. That's not necessarily a government site, but it's also, I believe, a nonprofit, and there's information there. And I'll give you more website as we go through the show. But this studentaid.ed.gov has a lot of information, and I believe you can give some responsibility to your student to, as part of their job in getting ready to go to college, to go on this website, search around, read some of the information that's available to kind of get them plugged into the whole process so they can understand. So many kids just think mom and dad are paying for it, which is a, you know, misconception. I don't think that parents should necessarily always pay for their children's education. If you have the means, you know, of course, go ahead and do that. But I don't think parents should impoverish themselves to pay for children's education. We do a lot in raising them, and they have to learn responsibility. So it's okay if you need to engage the children in this whole process as well. So this website is a great way to start, studentaid.ed.gov. Talking about the cost of college, what's included in the cost of college? Quite often, sometimes you'll hear schools, or you'll see it on websites, where they'll say, you know, tuition is $20,000. And you might think to yourself, oh, wow, I can swing that $20,000 per year. Not cheap still, but, you know, you might think you could cover that cost. But unless you continue to read, you won't realize that that $20,000 might just be the tuition. And tuition is simply the cost of taking courses, the classes. And the cost of classes vary depending on what college or institution your child, you know, chooses to go. What people don't always see is that there will be another additional cost if your student decides to go away to college and stay on campus, and that's room and board. Room and board being the lodging and the food cost for the institution. Room and board, if your child stays home, maybe they go to a community college, then we're typically looking at, as I said before, just the tuition for a school, and then maybe some, you know, equipment fees and service fees and things like that. Maybe their travel back and forth from home to campus, because you have to consider that. If your child is going to stay home and go to a community college, what is the transportation that they're going to use? Because if it's going to require a car that you don't currently have in your household, then you may have that additional cost of buying maybe a used car, the gas, and the car insurance for your student to be on your policy. So that would be some costs that you can't disregard. If your child is going to go away to school, but maybe the room and board at the college is higher than what you might think renting an apartment and giving your child a grocery budget would be, then quite possibly the room and board could be less than what you might see on, you know, the university's website as far as what costs to include. But keep in mind, a lot of colleges and universities will require the student to remain on campus or live on campus the first year unless they can show that they are like a local. When I was in college, we called them the townies, the people who lived in town. So those folks didn't have to stay on campus, but you might have to show that. All right, folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're going to continue our discussion on paying for college back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY reaches a well-informed and passionate listening audience every day. Enhance your image with our community by becoming an underwriting supporter. Spread the word about your business in an uncluttered atmosphere of high-quality NPR and locally produced programming. Underwriting is an affordable way to reach the public radio audience, and it may be tax-deductible. To learn more, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Okay, and welcome back, folks. This is Lori Siebert, your host. You are listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about paying for college tonight, and we are going to probably highlight a few things that will help folks who are looking to send their student this fall. But hopefully there will be lots of tips and ideas for people who have this coming up in subsequent years. It might be next year or even the year after. There's a lot of things you can do to start planning to get yourself ready and positioned to be able to afford college education for your student. Going to the website studentaid.ed.gov has lots and lots of tips. I recommend your student to get on that website and start snooping around and seeing all the things that they need to learn about going to college and different ways to save. And we have a caller on line one. We have Gary from Easton. Gary, can you hear me?
I can, not too well, but I can hear you.
Hi, how are you? Is this better?
Good.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Hi, how can I help you tonight?
Well, it's I was listening, and I just heard you mention about going to appropriate websites for information. And the other day, my daughter had come to me, and she's working on her FAFSA. Uh-huh. And we'd done this before, but not for 2 or 3 years. And she said, Dad, could you put in the financial information? I said, sure. I typed in FAFSA into Google. Thing popped up. FAFSA. Okay, I started filling it out. I went through all the stuff, put all my tax information. Get to the end, and there's a $75 approximately charge. And that didn't sound right to me.
Yeah.
So I realized, well, you know, I was on the wrong site. The real one is FAFSA. I believe it's FAFSA.ed/gov.
Or FAFSA.gov, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to be paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to pay for it.
And a lot of people don't realize it. Now, Gary, how long did it take you to fill out that information when you got to the end and saw the $75?
Oh, that was probably about 15 or 20 minutes because I had to dig out my tax return and look onto TurboTax and all sorts of information. And it turned out at the actual one, they have also an IRS data retrieval tool, which you kind of fill out you make your own PIN, which I think you need for the FAFSA. I'm not 100% all the details. I know the PIN that I put in worked, and it will go to the IRS and retrieve. You give it permission to go to the IRS, and it retrieves all the financial information that it needs. So you don't have to bother scrounging around for your W-2s and, you know, how much each person paid and filling out, looking for, you know, line this and that for all that sort of stuff.
Gary, that's great information because I had not realized that. So that's new information for me.
And it's free.
Yeah, I knew about the free. I knew about the FAFSA.gov, and I was going to caution people about that. I agree. It's like FAFSA.com is not the government website. Usually government websites will have that G-O-V at the end. But that's a great tool to be able to pull that information from the tax return, because I know that a lot of people get very stressed out about having to go grab their tax return and then knowing which information to put in.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that I hate dealing with, that stuff.
Yeah. I'm going to mention one other thing too, Gary. When you were completing it, were you confused at all? Because this is something I caution people on. Sometimes folks try to fill it out quickly and they enter all their assets and they don't realize that their retirement accounts don't count. So when they're saying, okay, what's your net worth or what are your assets? They might be looking at your bank accounts or your investment accounts, but they're not looking at your IRAs or your 401ks. Did you come across that? I haven't been on it this year.
We don't really, you know, I'm not sure.
Well, you can look again just to make sure, because
I will.
I want to make sure that people qualify for as much aid as they can. And if they're entering assets that are not required to be entered, that's a caution I have for people. So you want to make sure you're entering just the assets that they're asking for. And I think sometimes I have just done, you know, like quick calculators, and it'll maybe give a little description. I haven't been on the FAFSA website for a while, so I'm not exactly sure on that, but I want to make sure people don't include retirement accounts or annuities and things like that. So, well, Gary, thanks so much for calling and sharing your story. It's very relevant. Thanks so much. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Folks, if you have questions or comments like Gary's, I love new information. That's why I love learning, and that's why I love shows like this. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about paying for college, and the government has the a FAFSA form, which I'm going to talk about soon, which is the free application for federal student aid. And the important word there is free, but most people don't realize what FAFSA stands for. But Gary was smart enough to know that when he went on a website, after just Googling, which is very common, we all do that now, and FAFSA.com sounds as, you know, legit as FAFSA.org, but when he got to the end, there was a fee, that $75 fee, and that's where, you know, something kind of said to he said to himself, oh, that doesn't sound right. I think this was supposed to be free. And then, you know, he realized which website he was on. It's a very, very common misinterpretation. So remember, it's FAFSA, FAFSA.org. Lots of information there, as well as on this website, studentaid.ed.gov. That's G-O-V. Talking about the cost of college, and we talked about tuition, room and board. Can't forget about the books. The books can be almost $1,000 if you're not careful. The books and accessories, you got to, you know, make sure the kids have, you know, all the stuff for their room if they're going to live on campus. They're probably going to need a computer. And again, during the school year, if your kids plan to visit home occasionally, you've got to factor in the travel cost as well. So when we're looking at how much does college cost and are you going to be able to afford it, you can't forget about all those other things when you're trying to plan out. Because if your child wants to go to California and you live in Pennsylvania and that child thinks they're going to come home at Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter, they have to consider that either no, they're not going to come home, or how are you going to pay for it? The other issue when you're going to out-of-state schools, public universities are usually cheaper universities, right? But public universities out-of-state have out-of-state tuition. So you also kind of just have to be real practical with your kids when they're looking at schools. You just have to have lots of options. I know when I applied to college way back when, I applied to one college, and it was a private school. And here's a little example of just because there's a public university that's cheaper than a private school, it doesn't mean the costs are going to be different for you such that you would forego the private school. Private schools sometimes have other financial aid packages available that maybe the public university doesn't. So when you put them next to each other, depending on if you're going to qualify for aid or not, a public or a private school may be cheaper than the public school. So you don't necessarily want to rule out private schools. But when you're setting up a public university against a public university, the out-of-state ones, of course, will cost more. So you've got to make sure that your child realizes all that. I think variety is the bigger option here. Now, granted, it is going to cost some money. There's application fees to apply to these schools. So you do want to try to do your homework ahead of time and whittle it down. But it's all about awareness and knowing your options and quite often what your child, where your child thinks they want to go, like in their junior year, changes by the time they're making that decision their senior year. Folks, we are coming up on another break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. I'm going to talk about some ideas of lowering the cost for college, and then we're going to start talking about strategies for qualifying for aid. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. on the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Currently 82 degrees in the Lehigh Valley. Your forecast for tonight sees a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Some of these storms could produce gusty winds and heavy rains. However, the probability is about 30% of that. And low around 63. Tomorrow, mostly sunny during the daytime hours and mostly cloudy in the evening. High near 92, low around 68. Now back to Lori Siebert and your financial choices.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks for the weather update. That's on my behalf. The phone number this evening, folks, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're talking about paying for college. First, I want folks to understand the cost of college. We talked about room and board, tuition fees, equipment. What are some of the ways we can lower the cost of college? Some of the things you could do, there are so many opportunities available to high school students these days where they can actually take courses at the college level while they're in high school, and those courses can count toward their college education. What you have to be careful of, though, when your child, your student, eventually goes to college, there are colleges that charge based on the classes taken. So the tuition costs are based on the number of classes they take, and other colleges, it's just like $20,000 a semester, flat. It doesn't matter how many classes they take. So if your student is taking all kinds of classes in high school or making, you know, having courses count toward their college requirements, you have to check to see if it actually is going to make any difference based on the college they're going to go to. The other thing the kids can do if they are taking AP classes, advanced placement classes, if they go through the trouble of taking the AP class and then they don't want to pay the $30 or whatever it is to take the AP exam, that AP class isn't doing anything for them as far as college credits. The only way the kids get college credits for AP classes that they've taken is for them to actually take the exam and get a reasonable score on it that the college will accept it in lieu of credits. My daughter got several credits this way for the college that she went to by taking the AP exam. Now, her tuition was flat. It didn't matter how many classes she took. But what she did is she used those credits so that instead of having to take five classes in the fall, she took four because she had some other responsibilities that semester. And then she took four in one of her spring semesters when she thought she would be applying to grad schools and things like that. So there are still advantages to getting some of those classes, even if it's not going to lower your tuition. But just keep that in mind, that if you're trying to encourage your student to take these college classes to kind of reduce tuition at the college level, you have to make sure it's going to count. Now, one thing that they could do is if they got enough credits, they may be able to graduate a semester early, and then that you would save a semester of tuition that way. So that is one way to lower cost if your student had enough to count for like five classes. So that's something to keep in mind. They can also do things like there may be options to just test out of classes. That may or may not help. They can look for books that are used, buy books online that might be cheaper. They can look to see if there's any kinds of local scholarships that they could get with local businesses if they're working. They could look for these combined degree programs where maybe they go to a college for 3 years. If your student wants to be a doctor or a lawyer, a lot of colleges now have a combined degree program where they go 3 years at the bachelor's level and then they go right into grad school. So that's another great way to lower costs. And obviously living off campus or living in an apartment if an apartment cost would be less than room and board. Also, if your student, maybe not their freshman year, but their sophomore year, students can sign up to be a resident advisor, where they are like in charge of a floor at the college, and then they're responsible for making sure the kids are, you know, not getting out of control, partying and drinking, things like that, making sure their rooms are cleaned at the breaks, making sure the refrigerators are cleaned at the breaks. My daughter was a resident advisor 1 year, and I think it saved us about $13,000. So that is something definitely worth looking into, and that's at a private school. So lots of different options as far as lowering cost from the get-go when they are going to college. Okay, so those are just some of the strategies. All of these are available on that website, studentaid.ed.gov. So now we've talked about the cost of college and what you have to be aware of and prepared for. Let's talk about some strategies to qualify for aid. So there are several strategies. This comes into play, I would say, more for people who might qualify for financial aid or think they might qualify for financial aid. Some of the things that you can do would be save money in the parent's name, not the child's name, because the government, when you're looking at applying for financial aid, they're going to say that the child, if the child has assets and money, they would expect a larger contribution from the student than they would expect from the parent. So saving money in the parent's name versus the child's name is one strategy. Paying off consumer debt, such as credit card and auto loan balances, because then what you're doing is you're taking cash that's in bank accounts that would be treated as an asset available to pay tuition. You're reducing that and paying off consumer debt, which does not factor in to the financial aid equation. You don't get to put down your credit cards. So use cash in the bank, if as long as you have, you know, enough other means for emergencies. One of the strategies would be to pay off consumer debt, such as credit cards, auto loan balances. Another strategy, parents who want to go back to college and have been thinking about it, the parents could go back to school at the same time as their student, as their child. Now you might say, oh, gosh, how could I afford that? Well, quite possibly with the cost of two people going to college, it might lower the assets available for contribution to tuition, etc., such that both of you might qualify for some type of aid. To me, you would still be really out of pocket, and it's hard sometimes to think about spending more to save something. You still might not be ahead on that, so I caution you on that. As I said, if you're saving money in the parent's name, not the child's name, but let's say the student saved up a bunch of money and they were, you know, trying to be a good person, save their money, you could spend down their assets and income first, meaning let's pretend they needed to buy a computer. Have your student buy the computer with their money. If they needed a car for transportation to go back and forth to school, have your student use their money to buy the car or to pay for the auto insurance, something like that. That would reduce the amount of assets that the student has available to pay for tuition, and that could help with financial aid. Accelerate necessary expenses, meaning, again, bringing down the cash. So that's kind of the same thing. If financial circumstances have changed, for example, let's pretend you're filling out a FAFSA form for financial aid, and in 2011, your income was really high, and you're supposed to fill out the FAFSA based on your tax return. And let's say you lost your job, one of you lost your jobs. That is a special circumstance. You need to make sure you let them know. Another thing to lower the income on your tax return, minimize capital gains. So if you had investments that you were going to sell to use to pay the kids' tuition payments, if you have losses, you maybe want to harvest losses to offset capital gains. Otherwise, your tax return is going to look a little bit higher. You can maximize contributions to your retirement account, your 401k. By doing that, you reduce the income on page one. You increase your retirement account, which doesn't count toward financial aid, and you reduce assets in your bank account as well. It looks like we're at the half hour, the half break, so I will continue my strategies to help with financial aid when we get back. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Just to report, the National Weather Service sees a severe thunderstorm watch in northwestern Lehigh County, up around New Tripoli, Schnecksville, Neffs area. Somewhere between, I guess, New Tripoli will be around 6:45, and it'll come through Schnecksville and Neffs between 7 and 7:15. So it'll be a severe thunderstorm with heavy rain, and you'll get ponding on roads. So if you're driving up in that area, please be careful. The time is 6:31, and you are listening to Your Financial Choices here on WDIY Allentown 88.1 FM NHD. Now back to Lori.
Thanks, Ray. Now there's a big storm. Maybe we don't know, though, if the Weather Service said the storm is moving this way or not.
It's hanging up in northwestern Lehigh, Lori, so it should be okay. It looks like it's just going straight across the northern fringe, but it looks like Coca-Cola Park seems to be okay.
We'll be okay. Okay, we'll see.
At least right now.
We hope so. I don't get to go that often. So, okay, folks, you are listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA and a certified financial planner. We're talking tonight about paying for college. We covered a little bit of the cost of college. We talked a little bit about, now we're going to talk a little bit about some of the strategies to use to qualify for financial aid. And you might think, gosh, maybe it's too late already. I do want to tell you that the deadlines for federal financial aid has not passed. You can file for federal financial aid up through June 30th of 2013. I don't know if it means you'll get it if you wait too long. I don't know if it's like first come, first serve, or if they have reserves in their coffers. But there is plenty of time still to file for federal financial aid, even for this upcoming school year. You may have passed some of the state deadlines for state funding. For Pennsylvania, if you are a first-time applicant at a community college, a business trade technical school, a hospital school of nursing, or enrolled in a non-transferable two-year program, August 1st, 2012 looked like the application deadline. So don't think you don't qualify, and if you haven't already applied, don't think it's too late. Still try to do that, and then you indicate which year you are applying for financial aid. So some of those other strategies, we're talking about basically reducing assets or lowering income on your tax return, and it's a bit of a shifting of some of your income into retirement accounts or into purchases, in particular purchases that would benefit your student that you'd have to make anyway. Because what happens when you go to fill out the FAFSA form, the free application for financial student aid, the numbers that you're entering on the asset side are based on the day you're filling out the application. So recall, as Gary had mentioned earlier, about filling out the FAFSA form and pulling your tax return information right into the FAFSA form, and you can do it automatically now. The asset reporting is based on what you have the day you're filling out the form. And remember, it does not include retirement accounts. So one of those strategies we talked about was putting more money into your 401k, which reduces the income on your tax return, increases the amount in your retirement account. You don't have that extra money hanging out in your bank accounts. Some other strategies, ask grandparents to wait until the grandchild graduates before giving them money to help with their education. Now, grandparents can put money into 529 accounts, and that won't count against the student. And people can make payments to the institution directly, and it doesn't count as a gift either. So I want to mention that. Another strategy, you could prepay your mortgage. Equity in your home doesn't count for federal aid, but equity in your home may count when the institution is trying to figure out how much you can pay. So if you're going to a private school, for example, that private school may say, well, how much equity do the parents have in the home? And that may come into a calculation as far as how much aid the private institution is going to give you. But as far as federal aid goes, they don't look at the equity in your home. Okay, so those are some strategies. There's probably lots more, but that's all I'm going to go over right now because I want to get into what kinds of aid is available, because remember, we want to talk about how to pay for college. So paying for college can come in a number of forms, and we have mentioned the FAFSA several times. The FAFSA is the Free Application for Financial Student Aid, and that is a form that you fill out on the website, FAFSA.gov, FAFSA.gov. And there is no cost to it. And you fill out, you know, tax information, asset information. And from there, there is a calculation that is done. And there can be federal aid. There can be state aid. And there can be aid from the college. There also may be aid that would be available from nonprofits or private organizations as well. Sometimes the schools actually will have scholarships available that, based on maybe the financial aid application, there might be a scholarship that might meet some criteria that the person who funded the scholarship would have that your student may qualify for. So as far as federal aid goes, you're looking at things like loans and work study and grants. So when we look at federal student aid, the top one that you'd hope your child would qualify for would be a grant. And that the reason is grants are not loans. They do not have to be repaid. So you really hope that your child qualifies for some of these grants. And they're available for students attending colleges, career schools, and universities. So again, just because you think maybe your, you know, college that you're going to is, you know, not your typical university, it doesn't mean that you might not qualify for some type of aid. So you want to go fill out the FAFSA form. Some of the grants that are available, there's one called the Federal Pell Grant. It's awarded to undergraduate students who are financially needy and who have not earned a bachelor's or graduate degree. So that's someone who's, you know, just going into college, financially needy. A lot of people might say, oh, I won't pass. I'm not needy. Well, you know what? You never know. You never know. So you get in the habit of filling out that form. And again, sometimes another reason to fill out the FAFSA form, again, is not, you might not qualify for the federal aid, but depending on what institution your child is applying to, in particular a private school, they're going to want you to fill out the FAFSA form because they may have that aid available that the federal government might not have based on their own criteria. I went to a private school when I first started, and there was a number of different awards that I got because it was a private school. So keep that in mind. Now, the Pell Grant, the annual award limits are up to $5,550. There's a Federal Supplemental Education Opportunity Grant, and that is up to $4,000. That's awarded to undergraduate students with exceptional financial need who've not earned a bachelor's or graduate degree. So that could be another option. There's one called the Teach Grant. That's up to $4,000. That's for people who want to be teachers, but also will sign an agreement whereby they're going to, work at a particular school when they come out of college, a high-need school, et cetera. So certain requirements for that. So if someone wants to be a teacher, that's available. There's one for Iraq and Afghanistan service grant for students whose parents or guardians were a member of the U.S. Armed Forces and died as a result of performing military service in Iraq or Afghanistan after the events of 9/11. So that sounds a little obscure. So unless you're aware of it, why would you ever think that there might be something like that available out there? Get your students on this website, have them start going through all these different pages where they can get this information, studentaid.ed.gov. So grant programs are the best because you don't have to pay them back. So that's your priority list. See if your child will qualify for grants. Now, grants, again, are for highly needy students. You might have a student who's not like high need. They may qualify for other student aid, which involves loans. So you might think, well, gosh, a loan doesn't sound like aid. How is that going to help me? I'm borrowing money. Where is the help there? Well, because the loans that your student may be eligible for have lower interest rates. And that is very attractive. I realized I don't think I've been saying the phone number. Let me say the phone number in case people have questions, because we do have about 20 minutes left. The phone number is 610-758-8810. I just see all this information that I want to get out, and I'm spewing it as fast as I can. The show's going very fast for me, so I want to pause for a moment. If someone has questions, they can call in at 610-758-8810. Talking about how to pay for college. The reason you'd want to do the FAFSA, even if you think you may not qualify for aid, might be that you would qualify for loans. The reason you'd want to do it this way is because some of the federal loans are, in essence, almost subsidized because they have rates that are more competitive or lower than what a parent or a child could go get on their own. A personal loan. So there are loans like the federal Perkins loan for undergraduate and graduate students. It depends on the student's financial need and availability of funds, and the interest rate is 5%. In this case, the college is the lender, and the payment is owed to the college that made the loan. And it's up to $5,500, and graduates and professional degree students, it's up to $8,000. So if you are out there and you're a graduate student as well, don't forget about the FAFSA form and going out and filling out the FAFSA form, because you may qualify for some of these federal loans with the lower interest rates as well. There is a direct subsidized loan for undergraduate students enrolled at least half time and have financial need. The interest rate is 3.4%. 3.4% for loans made between July 1st, 2012 and June 30th, 2013. And the word subsidized indicates that the student is not charged interest on the loan while in school and during deferment periods. And the U.S. Department of Education is the lender, and the payment is owed to the U.S. Department of Education. So that is probably why that 3.4% rate looks better than the federal Perkins loan rate. Those loans are between $3,500 and $5,500, depending on your year in school. So subsidized means there is no interest accruing over the period of the loan. That's another good one. The direct unsubsidized loan is 6.8%. That is not need-based. It's for undergraduate and graduate students who are enrolled at least half-time. It's unsubsidized. It's between $5,500 to $20,500. And then there's some other little adjustments to that. But it's also paid to the Department of Education. but the student is responsible for interest during all school periods. So 6.8%, you start paying the interest while you're in school, then you're not, building up the loan bigger than it is, but it's not need-based. So that's a little bonus for people who are having trouble paying for their education. Folks, I'm going to talk a little bit about more about the loans when we get back. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back with your financial choices. The phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. I'm doing the quick rundown, trying to get this information out. But if you have questions, please call in because I can always follow up next week with anything I might have missed. We're talking about loans. We talked about the federal Perkins loan, the subsidized loan, what subsidized means, unsubsidized loan, what that means. And then there's something called the Direct Plus loan for parents. The rate is 7.9%. Before we talk too much about that, I want to caution people about going and taking out this kind of a loan. 7.9%, it's a little high. You might have some other options that you can explore. So I'll talk about that as I go through this. And then there is a Direct Plus loan for graduate or professional students as well. Now, the Direct Plus loan for parents, maximum amount of the award is the cost of attendance minus any other financial aid. So there are loans available that people could apply for. You have to see if you qualify. And what happens once you fill out the FAFSA form is you'll get like an award letter, and then you have to accept which aid they are offering you. And you can accept some, not all, not any. It's up to you. So you would fill out, once you get your award letter, you would respond back whether you accept the aid that is available. So sometimes, even if you think you can afford everything, maybe you need to still fill out the FAFSA form, see what they come back with as far as the loans, et cetera, that might be available to you, because maybe you would get one of these direct subsidized loans and that's free money for several years. So you might want to use that as a financial planning opportunity to kind of maximize the use of your money and what you're doing if it's available. So keep that in mind. Now, I just lost my, let me think here. I wanted to go back to the plus loan for parents, the interest rate, 7.9%. First of all, parents, you want your kids to take some responsibility. I didn't mention work study. Your child may qualify for work study. That could be part of their financial aid package where they work on campus and then they're given a check and they can use that money to pay for some of their expenses. If they did get work study or didn't qualify for work study, it doesn't mean that there's not jobs available to the students on campus. So you want to make sure that if your student isn't working and they can afford to, if they're capable enough to handle both their academics and a little bit of work, that's another great way for them to contribute. And obviously, they can always work during the summer and save, quite a bit of money and then, use that toward their expenses, toward their books, et cetera, and get that money paid before they're filling out their next financial aid application. But and looking at the student loans that they can take as well. Some of the things that parents have to be cautious of, versus taking out a 7.9% interest loan, is what other resources do they have, themselves? Could they take a home equity, or could they borrow from a 401k. You can take a loan out from a 401k. You can't take a distribution from a 401k without paying income taxes and a 10% penalty if you're under age 59 and a half. There is no exception to the 10% penalty for money withdrawn from a 401k for education. People sometimes get that confused with the IRAs because there is an exception to the 10% penalty if someone takes some money out of an IRA and uses it for education. Now, it doesn't exempt you from the income tax, so you've got to be careful of that. There is no exemption from the income tax when you take distributions. But a 401k, you have to look at your summary plan document from your employer to see if loans are allowed and how much and what kind of interest rate you'd have to pay back. Remember, the interest rate you're paying back on a loan in your 401k is interest you're paying yourself. That money is going back into the 401k. So you definitely want to look at your options as far as where you're going to get the money if you, as the parent, say you want to be responsible for some of the payment for the education. Don't assume that just the Direct Plus loan for parents is the best way to go. You want to look at all of your different options. Okay. All right. Now let me go over a little bit because I'm getting close to the end. I will say the phone number again is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Let me try to give like some perspective of some planning that could be done. For example, had some clients come in, they had been advised to save as much money in their retirement accounts as they could because this advisor had said they could use it for the college education. They didn't realize they couldn't really use it for the college education without some cost to themselves. So cost, if they took money out of an IRA, it would be income tax, 10% penalty. If they took money out of the 401k, income tax, 10% penalty. So they were a little confused as to like where they got this advice or maybe how they interpreted the advice. I don't know. As far as the strategy of saving money in the retirement account. Now, that's different than what we talked about earlier, where you put money into the retirement account to reduce your assets so that you qualify for financial aid. This is a little bit of a different story, okay? So you've got to make sure you're putting it all together. But in this case, the folks had lots of equity in their house. So one of the strategies we used, they refinanced. They got a much lower interest rate. They stretched their loan out just a little bit longer. Their interest rate had been high on their mortgage. So that is something you all need to look at anyway. See what interest rates you're paying on your mortgages right now, because the rates are so low, you might want to look at refinancing. They refinanced. They didn't change their payment at all. Pulled a big chunk of money out of the equity. They funded 529 accounts, which is a college savings plan that has tax attributes. If you use the money for qualified education expenses, you don't have any income tax on it. But they got a deduction on their Pennsylvania return, a 3.07% tax savings on the amounts of money they put into the 529, and then they still had the other money to make the first year tuition payment. By making the first year tuition payment out of their bank account in 2012, they're going to qualify for the American Opportunity Credit. Folks, if you have 529s, I want to tell you, make sure that you pay out of pocket at least enough to qualify for the American Opportunity Credit if you otherwise qualify, meaning your income's low enough that you would qualify for the American Opportunity Credit. Make sure that you have some out-of-pocket cost, because otherwise, if you take all the money out of the 529, it won't count. I had a call from Marie in Center Valley. Let me see if I can get this. I'm an adult student in my 40s and was told that my loan money for school will run out before I get to my nursing program. She's still taking her prerequisites now. Currently unemployed, are there any specific options, grants, funds for students at this age? Marie, you're not on the air, but I am not sure if you filled out the FAFSA form or not. Hopefully you did. And if you went through the FAFSA, you would find out what student loans, your federal loans you might have qualified for. I would think if you're unemployed, unless you're married and your spouse has income, I would think that you would have qualified for some other federal student aid, whether it was grants or subsidized loans. The other thing that you could do is go to the school and let them know of your situation, because if you originally applied or started going to school when you were employed, they may have that in their records and be factoring that into the aid or the loans or the financial aid package that they might have given you. So you might need to alert them that your circumstances have changed. The other thing you might want to do is contact the financial aid office at the school where you are and let them know that you're in these circumstances, and are there any other scholarships that they're aware of or that you could apply for? All right. So because you said your loan money ran out, which makes me wonder if you took the loan money and were then using it for, you know, living expenses, which happens. You know, my husband and I had to do that as well, because you, as we were talking at the beginning of the show, when we look at the cost of college, it's not just the tuition that we're paying for, it's also our room and board, whether it's at the college or it's in our apartment or our home. So I would think that that would have all flushed through when you filled out the FAFSA form. So Marie, I would contact the financial aid office at the college. They are used to working through these issues with people, and hopefully they would know the best options for you or give you the resources as far as other loans or scholarships that might be available to you. So I hope that helps. And that is something for everyone to keep in mind. The government websites are great resources, but also your student financial aid office at the college is also great as well. All right. So 529 accounts, let me wrap that up. As I mentioned, you can make a contribution to a 529. You can get a credit on your tax return. The credit is capped. It's up to $13,000, you know, per person that you put the money into the 529. So if I have two kids, $13,000 times two kids is $26,000. If my husband does the same thing, that's another $26,000. The caveat is that we both have to have that much income in order to get the deduction. Okay, if I have no income, then I don't get the deduction, and my husband doesn't get the deduction for the amount that I put in. So it's an immediate 3.07% benefit. So when you think about having cash in the bank and what you're earning on it, and if you know you're going to have some college costs that you're going to have to pay for, then doesn't it make sense to put the money into a 529 and get a deduction on your tax return? And then you just have to be careful when you then later withdraw the money out of the 529. You want to make sure that you're matching it up to the qualified education expenses for your student, such that if my student has $10,000 of tuition and I have $14,000 in my 529, I'm not going to pull out 14 if my qualified education expenses aren't 14. I'll pull out 10. You want to match the expenses with the distribution in the same year. All right, folks, I hope I highlighted enough about paying for college and gave you some ideas. There's always more. The show's only an hour. I can only talk so fast. But I appreciate the calls this evening. Those are always great. Next week, folks, I am going to be talking about a surtax, which is going to affect probably a fair amount of people, but it might not affect any of you. But I still think it's important to talk about. It's the Medicare surtax that's going to be on wages over a certain amount, and a Medicare surtax on investment, net investment income over a certain base amount. So I just want to bring that to everybody's attention. And because it's not going to apply to everybody, I'll probably throw in some other tax planning strategies that we need to look at before year end, things like Roth conversions and things like that. So we'll do that next week. Folks, thanks so much for being here. I hope it was helpful. We enjoy having you here each and every week. We want to remind you to be proactive, not reactive, and to make the best of your financial choices each and every week. I want to thank Ray. I want to thank Andrea. Thank you, the listeners. Stay tuned for Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition coming up next. Have a great week.